Case number 19-4074, Andrea Drake et al. Versus DePuy Orthopedics, Inc. et al. In case number 19-4075, In Re ASR Hip Implant Products Liability Litigation. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Truesdale, you may proceed for the appellant.
Thank you. May it please the court. Mike Truesdale on behalf of the Johnson Law Firm and Stephen Johnson. When parties agree to arbitrate the issue of arbitrability, a court may not disregard that decision, and a court may not disregard the arbitrator's decision on whether a claim is arbitrable or not, even if the basis for that determination appears to be wholly groundless to the court. This case involves two decisions by the district court judge made in two separate proceedings that disregarded arbitrability decisions made by properly appointed arbitrators that determined that matters either were arbitratable or were not arbitratable. And the resulting, the result of that determination is the improper order below, which vacated a proper arbitration proceeding and refused to confirm that proper proceeding and remanded the proceeding for arbitration before a tribunal which has previously determined it lacked jurisdiction to decide the matter through arbitration proceedings. And is that reason why we're here today? Because those orders were erroneous. So what I'd like to start with, I mean, the facts in this case are detailed, they're well set out in the briefs, but what I would like to do is just highlight a couple of ones that are relevant to the question of arbitrability. And those facts start with an analysis of the attorney representation agreement that is at issue in this case. In 2012, the Johnson Law
Counsel, wouldn't you say this the outcome here is going to turn on whether we are governed, whether we decide this matter, this dispute is governed by the retainer agreement or the or alternatively the master settlement agreement with respect to the arbitration provisions, if the master settlement agreement controls, then I would guess that you would not prevail, and wouldn't we have to determine which of these and doesn't this entire appeal rest on which of these agreements we determine governs this matter?
Judge Clay, that is a very good question, and I probably reach a different result than what you suggested, and let me explain why. The question whether we prevail under the master settlement agreement or under the ARA, and I'll talk about this in detail later. I think the answer is we prevail under both of those based upon what the special master said. But more importantly, the question that you just raised is an issue that turns on the question of arbitrability. Now, if Justice Yanni or Special Master Yanni determined the question, he answered the question that you just asked, whether the master settlement agreement applies or whether the attorney retention or representation agreement applies. And she said, I concur. I do not have jurisdiction under the master settlement agreement.
Counsel, I think, aren't you reading an awful lot into that? She suddenly became aware that there was another arbitration proceeding going on and simply deferred to it. I can't read into it the substantive meaning that that everything was proper. She just said first in time, first in right, and let it go. But other than that, I have difficulty following what you suggest.
Well, Judge Guy, I appreciate that. And obviously I disagree, and let me explain why. We can look to the document itself. Judge Yanni's ruling does not say, order number two, deference to pending arbitration, or order number two, under comedy, I am not going to consider this. It is titled order number two, jurisdiction. And then she walks through her order. Her first order addresses the bases that were, or identifies the bases that were asserted on which jurisdiction was based. And that was a clause in the master settlement agreement that said, if two or more lawyers are the primary law firm as a defined term, then a dispute can be resolved. She determined, based on Mr. Johnson's objection, that that provision didn't confer jurisdiction because this dispute, this fee dispute, is not among two primary law firms. This is a fee dispute among a lawyer who was terminated, and this is a simple breach of contract case. This isn't a fee dispute within the MSA. And the second provision that the arbitrator or that the parties relied upon to invoke jurisdiction under the MSA was provision 3.2.3.2. And that provision said disputes over representation are arbitrable. And again, this is not a dispute about representation. Mr. Johnson was terminated. There's no question about that. And Mr. Drake had the right to terminate him. The question is, once he terminated him, and if he did so without cause, what remedy did Mr. Johnson get? So this is a Texas breach of contract case. This isn't a case under the MSA. So I disagree with you when you suggest that this is a question of comedy. The way I read it, and I think it makes sense, is that once Judge Gianni looked at those provisions, looked at the objections to jurisdiction, she concluded, wait a minute, the dispute in this case falls outside of the ambit of the MSA, and thus it is proper, and thus I don't have jurisdiction, and it is properly arbitrable under the ARA rather than under the MSA. More importantly, she had the right to make that decision. And under the Henry Schein case, this court may not second guess, or the district court may not second guess her decision to do so. It is a question of arbitrability. It is her determination whether the MSA conferred jurisdiction over the dispute, and she concluded that it did not. And so under Henry Schein,
That's okay, Mr. Truesdale. It's just, the order is a bit cryptic. I mean, it just simply says, hey, there's another JAMS arbitration going on. Apparently she's affiliated with that company or firm as well. And she then, for that reason, apparently, she says there's no jurisdiction. It's not like she's interpreting the scope of the MSA. It's almost like a professional courtesy feel that she doesn't want to get in the way of a fellow JAMS arbitrator.
If she had intended to do that, I believe her order would have said that. You could skip paragraph 5 in her order, and and this is on page ID 271.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys all have this in front of you. It's a key document, but paragraph 4 says, I have read the objection to jurisdiction. I have read the basis on which jurisdiction was invoked, and I have read the objection. And by the way, paragraph 5, the way I read it is, when they filed this arbitration, they didn't even tell me that this was already pending because it's a fee dispute under a breach of contract claim in Texas. I kind of read that differently. But then if you skip to paragraph 7, based on the objections that I read, I concur. I do not have jurisdiction. And the first Options versus Kaplan case says jurisdiction in the arbitration context is a proxy for arbitrability. And so she made that determination. She had the right to make that determination. And so when she says, I have no jurisdiction, she is saying this dispute is not arbitrable under the ARA. It is.
Can you remind me of what provision of the ARA, in your view, then binds Judge Helmick, in your view, to say, like the special master did, there's no arbitrability under this MSA?
May I clarify your question? You asked.
Sure. Provision. Well, no,
ARA?
You're right. No, it would be a provision of the MSA itself.
That's
right?
Correct.
Okay. That, in your view, makes Judge Helmick bound by this jurisdictional determination. So what provision of the MSA, just so I know what your argument is?
We could start with provision 14.1.3.2 of the MSA. What that provision says is that the MSA, if there's going to be an arbitration under the MSA, it will be pursuant to the American Arbitration Association's commercial arbitration rules. Okay. Now, the reason that is important is this court recently decided the Domino's Pizza case. I always get the person named Bradford, I think, or Blaylock. I'm sorry, I'm botching the first name of it. But it was a June 20th Sixth Circuit opinion, which basically said, like Henry Schein did, and like 11 of the 12 federal circuits that have decided the issue, that when a agreement incorporates the AAA rules, the AAA rules provide that the decision of arbitrability is delegated to the arbitrator, and the arbitrator to decide that. And then Henry Schein tells us that if a decision of arbitrability is dedicated to the arbitrator, a court may not disturb it, even if they find it wholly groundless, even if Judge Helmick
disagrees. Wait a minute, but is this the thing you're referring to in the AAA rules? Is that somewhere part of our record here?
Oh, yes, Your Honor. It's in the 2015 ASR HIP settlement agreement.
Okay.
But it's paragraph 14.1.3.2.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, but you're basically saying that this provision of the master settlement agreement itself incorporates something from the AAA arbitration rules, right?
And it incorporates the rules, yes. Yes.
And that's what binds Judge Helmick?
Well, technically, yes. And the reason it binds,
my question is, notwithstanding what we said about these rules or some version of them in another case, do we have the thing that's incorporated here, these AAA rules, do we have that in our record somewhere so that I can look at that?
Yes, Your Honor. And where the AAA rules are cited, I can answer that on a rebuttal. I can find it, but the AAA rules are in the record.
Do it on rebuttal. I just want to make sure it's in the record.
Yes, Your Honor, they are, because we cited them in our reply brief as well. I can track down a record.
Don't take up your time. Just on rebuttal, let me know where it's at.
Bottom line is that if the issue is arbitrability, Judge or Special Master Yanni had the right to make that decision, and Judge Helmick does not have the power to override that and disregard it. And that's the lesson of Henry Schein. So we have two arbitrators now, Yanni saying that this is not arbitrable under the MSA, and we have Judge Ashworth in Texas acting as an arbitrator. I'm out of time, Your Honor.
All right. We'll hear from
you. I just want one last question. I still can't wrap my head around the fact that there was the original Texas arbitration was pending. And that if they had jurisdiction there couldn't be jurisdiction two places. So how does Judge Yanni have jurisdiction to make any binding rulings if in fact there was a prior arbitration going?
Well, and that's another good point. We could get meta here, because to the extent that there was an arbitration proceeding going on in Texas at the time of that the Drakes went to Special Master Yanni, that further complicates Judge Helmick's conclusion that the MSA somehow amended the ARA. Keep in mind, the ARA arbitration had been going on well before the settlement agreement was ever even entered in the MDL. So we have an ongoing arbitration, and then we have this MDL, and now the presumption is, well, by entering into a settlement agreement in the MDL, the parties agreed to amend their prior contract, their one-page fee agreement, and basically cancel the ongoing arbitration and set up a new regime when the contract says nothing to the sort of that in the MSA. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, Your Honor. I hope I did, but if she concludes that she didn't have jurisdiction, then you're absolutely right. The proceeding should have gone up forward in the ARA as it did. And I apologize I just completed dental surgery. I'm having such a hard time speaking clearly right now, and I apologize for that. I sound like I have a hockey puck in my mouth.
You're doing fine, sir.
With that, I'll return to my remainder of time if there is any left at this point.
Well, all right. We'll hear from the other side. Mr. Stewart?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court, opposing counsel. I think it's important to remember some facts about the The appellee here. Mr. Drake is a 71-year-old man who fired the Johnson Law Firm almost 8 years ago. He had revision surgery on both hips, stemming from the underlying MDL here, and a large portion of his overall settlement has remained in trust for just over 5 years now, while this attorney fee dispute is pending. Mr. Johnson wants to have his cake and eat it too. What he wants to do is he wants to have the provisions and the safety and the discovery of the complex multi-district litigation without availing himself to the arbitration proceedings within the MDL. We know that that's the case because he, not only the attorney, Special Master Yanni's orders don't reflect a decision with respect to jurisdiction within the MDL, and I'm going to get to that in a second. But the attorney representation agreement, the ARA, was signed before the MDL proceedings. Johnson himself filed into the MDL on behalf of Mr. Drake, thereby availing himself to the protections of the MDL. So simply what we're asking for is that, and what Judge Helmick found is that once you're in the MDL, there's a proceeding, there's a manner, there's something set aside with respect to arbitration as to how fee disputes are going to be handled. And it's important to remember that that not only applies to the plaintiff and the client, as well as the defendant, but also interested parties. And that's well defined in the master settlement agreement.
I have a problem with that, though, in the sense that Johnson isn't seeking any of the recovery under the master settlement agreement. The recovery he's seeking is a quantum merit contingent fee that was earned, arguably, during the time that before he was terminated.
Your Honor, thank you for the question, Your Honor. Respectfully, I would disagree with that. I would point you to page 16 in appellant's brief. With respect to quantum merit, that's not what Mr. Johnson is seeking. He's seeking a full fee, his full attorney fee, with respect to this issue, because under Texas law, he's entitled to a full fee if there's a breach of contract without due cause. So there's no quantum merit component of this. Attorney Johnson is seeking a full fee from a client that fired him 8 years
ago. That's correct. That's correct. But the significance of it is he's seeking it under Texas law, and he needs Texas law to prevail and keep what he's already gotten.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not sure I understand your question. He hasn't gotten anything.
Well, I understand that. He's seeking to protect an award. He may not have collected it.
I think it might be helpful to back up a little bit and explain some of the background facts with respect to this. And if I don't answer your question, I'm trying to get to it the best that I can, but given the facts of the case, I want to get there as quickly as possible. So there was an arbitration that occurred in Texas. Two points with respect to that. It was under heavy objection with respect to jurisdiction the entire time, and then also with respect to the arbitrator himself. You're correct, Your Honor. Mr. Johnson did get an arbitration award with respect to that, and then sought to confirm it in two different district courts in Texas. Both, one dismissed for lack of jurisdiction over Mr. Drake himself, the other sua sponte transferred to the Northern District of Ohio because Judge Helmick was already overseeing that issue with respect to the multi-district litigation.
Well, let me interrupt again because I don't want to intrude upon your time on other matters, but you've confirmed the fact that he did get an award in Texas.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's all I wanted to clarify.
Okay. Then yes, he did get an award in Texas. Ultimately we decided to move forward and defend in that arbitration to avoid a default hearing. And so we we move forward with that. I want to touch on Special Master Yanni's orders. There are two different orders, and I think it's important because those are really the crux of a lot of appellant's argument with respect to this issue. With respect to Special Master Yanni's orders, the second one, Special Master Yanni merely said at the time this matter, and then she references a JAMS number, was referred to me that, as the Special Master. She was unaware that it was already pending as an arbitration before Judge Ashworth. And then when she ultimately decided to not move forward with the arbitration, she said, I do not have jurisdiction over the matter and hereby dismiss. And then she dismissed the JAMS reference number. And she also withdrew scheduling order number one. There are two points that I think are important there. First, Special Master Yanni made no reference with respect to the MDL, the Northern District of Ohio, or the Master Settlement Agreement. She merely said that I do not have jurisdiction over this result and kicked it down to the arbitration already going on in Texas.
In your view, would she have any reasoned basis to distinguish between her own jurisdiction as the arbitrator under the MSA and jurisdiction under the MSA arbitration provision generally?
With respect to what I'm noting there is more of a stylistic preference than it is any sort of ruling with respect to her. If she were to say it as part of the master settlement agreement, or I on behalf of the MDL are doing this.
But I mean, if it's a stylistic preference, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, if she's basically saying we are in this arbitration under the MSA without jurisdiction, then your point about I doesn't go anywhere.
I think her next bullet point speaks to that interpretation with respect to her individually, because she then says, I concur, I do not have jurisdiction over this matter and dismiss. And what she dismissed was the JAMS case number. And then she said scheduling order one in this matter is withdrawn. What she didn't do is say that the Northern District of Ohio doesn't have jurisdiction, or the multi-district litigation doesn't have jurisdiction, or the master settlement agreement doesn't control. I can see that it's my reading into it that she is saying I individually, but I believe it's there, and I believe that her order speaks to that with respect to a matter of comedy. And I also think if you look to page 12 in appellant's brief, this point is largely acknowledged. The last paragraph of page 12 of the appellant brief, it says, in speaking to Special Master Yanni's orders, implicit in her ruling was that neither section 1.255 nor 3.2.32 of the 2015 MSA included Johnson such that he would be brought within the scope of the agreement. I think it's important to highlight that, because that's exactly what the crux of their argument is based on, implicit. They're asking you to imply that Special Master Yanni said there was no personal jurisdiction or no jurisdiction in this matter with respect to the MDL, and that Texas law applied. And that's simply not something she did. That's not something she explicitly noted. She merely acknowledged that there was an ongoing JAMS arbitration in Texas, and for that reason, stated that she did not have jurisdiction.
Well, even assuming that you're correct, certainly that's all that was intended. That's just sort of the second argument for Johnson. He that isn't leave him high and dry. He still has other arguments relative to the issues before us. Correct?
Johnson would have other arguments, but a large portion of their brief was dedicated to Special Master Yanni's orders and the implications following from them. So with respect to Special Master Yanni's orders, I was seeking to clarify that point first. I can't, with respect to the remaining arguments, one point I want to make before diving into each of them individually is that much of appellant's brief was spent talking about facts that weren't accepted by the district court, the Sixth Circuit of Appeal or Court of Appeals the first time around, or the district court after they actually vacated the arbitration award.
I don't know. Speaking for myself and maybe picking up where Judge Guy left off, I'm more interested in your response to the arguments about whether Mr. Johnson somehow bound himself to the MSA. I mean, it's an unusual case. He's got an agreement, the attorney representation agreement. He has an arbitration award in hand, which under the FAA means you usually win. It can be vacated if the arbitrator exceeded his jurisdiction, and that's kind of what we're talking about. But how is it that he ends up getting bound by a different agreement to which he was never a signatory, namely the MSA?
That's an interesting question. And there are some interesting facts in this case. I think it's important to remember the timeline here. So the attorney representation agreement was signed. Subsequent to that, Mr. Drake fired.
Right. Mr. And then Johnson files hurries up and files a claim in the MDL. Right. I guess I'm looking for not a chronology, but a legal analysis about how these facts as a legal matter then make this guy bound by an agreement that he didn't sign. I'm not being skeptical. It'd be helpful to have an explanation.
That would largely be the explanation. With respect to the master settlement agreement and the MDL, these are complex litigations. But ultimately, when you avail yourself to the protections of the MDL, you can't pick and choose what parts apply to the litigation moving forward with respect to your plaintiff or client. What you do is you choose to be a part of that litigation. And then from there, many of the issues, not all of the issues, obviously, but many of the issues are dealt with under the framework of the MDL. So at that point, that is the point at which the ARA, as Judge Helmick laid out, was amended. So some of the cases that Judge Helmick cited.
There's no meaning in mind, certainly, for a modification here.
Well, the meaning of the minds type argument, or more almost law school-esque argument with respect to that.
Well, they teach law in law school. That's kind of what I'm looking for here. A doctrine.
Not
a story.
And what Judge Helmick talked about in his order, which I think was helpful, was talking about that Texas law plainly talks about modification with respect to an existing agreement. Mm-hmm. And then he cited to In re Vioxx and another case that started with a K.
Okay, but you need a meeting of the minds to modify a contract. Last time I checked, and consideration. And I'm scratching my head about how there was a meeting in the minds here. I mean, the guy gets fired. He says, I've got a claim against, I reserve a claim against whatever this person gets out of this proceeding. He goes off. And 3 years later, there's a MSA. And how is there a meeting of the minds that Johnson is swapping out the arbitration in the ARA for the one in the MSA? I'm having a hard time connecting that.
Sure. And with respect to the meeting of the minds, I mean, that Johnson represented to the MSA and the MDL that he represented Mr. Drake at the time that he submitted this, at the time that he submitted the complaint. So it's difficult to separate the two as far as representation and with respect to that. I understand the argument with respect to meeting of the minds. It's difficult to point to a specific instance. But Johnson represented to the MDL that he represented Drake and filed into the MDL, which they ultimately were both parties to and which ultimately governed the resolution of the claim. As far as pointing to a specific instance of meeting of the minds modification, I'd instead point to the authority that I've mentioned, as well as Judge Helmick's order, which discusses Texas law, contemplates. I see my time is running out. Can I finish my answer, or would you?
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Judge. Texas law considers changing or modification with respect to agreements. I can't, it's difficult to point to a specific meeting of the minds type situation.
Usually when there is one, you can point to it, you know? But have you guys tried to mediate this case?
Multiple times, Your Honor.
All right. Okay.
But
yeah. All right.
All right. Do we have rebuttal? Did you reserve it? I think you reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel.
And please, the court. I would just like to start with the analysis of the second point of Judge Gianni's or Special Master Gianni's order that was referenced a minute ago. And that I'm not going to talk about the I don't have jurisdiction. I mean, that's not even tenuous because a district court judge or, you know, writing an opinion is not going to say the United States District Court for the Northern District of Ohio doesn't have.
But at the same time, I think that, Mr. Stewart has a point that this order doesn't remotely lay out any analysis to the effect that there is no jurisdiction in this MDL and under the MSA.
Well, that's
really what you're saying Judge Helmick was bound to say. And I mean, it doesn't say that.
I'm not saying that Judge Helmick is bound to say that. I'm saying Judge Helmick is bound to respect what Special Master Gianni says, because
I'm saying. And Special Master Gianni had close to nothing in support of her conclusion that I don't have jurisdiction. My point is Judge Helmick had to make a decision whether there was jurisdiction under the Master Settlement Agreement and the MDL over this dispute, whether it was subject to the arbitration provision of the MSA. There is zero analysis of that question in this order. So I think you both have a lot to worry about on this issue, is what I'm suggesting. And in your case, it's none of what you want it to say is here, other than a result that she says she doesn't have jurisdiction.
Your Honor, may I address that point?
That's why I said it. So yes. Both respond.
I mean, I have a minute left, and the answer that I would like to give is twofold. You can't really read into the reference to I concur that I don't have jurisdiction. If she concurs, what is she doing? She's agreeing with an argument that was made. And the argument that was made was the argument that was made in Johnson's objection to jurisdiction, which wasn't Yanni-centric, it was MSA-centric. It was that the MSA does not confer jurisdiction over this proceeding for purposes of arbitration. So you've got to look at it that way.
You're reading an awful lot into it too. I'm just telling you, what I'm telling you is both you guys have a lot of risk. Your guy got 62% of the award.
No, Your Honor, he got 35%. The remainder was attorney's fees, which he was entitled to receive under Texas law.
And that's all right. Well, okay. But, I mean, just speaking for myself, it would seem like this is about money. He's got a 62% entitlement. It would seem like it could be worked out, but you're here to get an answer. And if you can't work it out, somebody's going to be disappointed and we'll do our best.
All right. If there's no further questions, then that will conclude the arguments and the case is submitted.